Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a real butthead. It's Niall Moore.
All right, butthead.
You know, you and I haven't talked in 12 years, you know, and then the first thing I introduce you as is a real butthead.
Hey, well, it fits the topic, right?
You know, I can't say butthead like Biff, though. The way Biff calls people butthead, that guy just emphasizes the word so well. In this movie, Spaceman from
like
Pluto.
A definite, like, gruff kind of, like, kind of, there's a real, like, venom in it, I guess, is the way I put it.
Yeah, hey, butt. Like, I think he emphasizes butt, butthead. I can't do it. I've been trying. So thanks for coming on and talking about Spaceman from Pluto with me.
Yeah, hey, no worries. Yeah, as you know, like, I studied the old space science back in the day when I was undergrad, so it's right up my alley.
Nice. So, I mean, I'm really happy that, you know, everyone, Bob Gale, Bob Zemeckis, Steven Spielberg, listened to Sid Sheinberg's notes, and they changed it from Back to the Future to Spaceman from Pluto. I think that's a much better name.
It's like, you know, the 1950s theme of much better.
And I kind of loved how they brought in 1950s creature features into this movie. When Marty shows up in the 50s, they immediately are like, that's an alien. That's a monster. Because of just the atomic age at the time. So I love that.
Yeah, like, well, if you just look at the movie in general, like, there's not a wasted shot. Every single thing is just so tight. It's like, okay, why has he got a radiation suit? It's like, well, he needs to set up this shot, like, later, and it's brilliant.
You and I both read a book about this to get ready for it, and then we also watched all the documentaries, and it's kind of crazy how they wrote the script on this. They're like, okay, he's skateboarding in the beginning. He invents skateboarding. He plays rock and roll with a giant amp. He's going to play rock and roll later. It's going to be too loud later. There's a truck he wants. He gets the truck at the end. Biff wrecks the car. Biff is cleaning the car at the end. It's like ridiculous how just everything kind of connects. It's just like, but I can see, would that maybe take the fun out of writing the script? I mean, it makes it a brilliant script, but you're just putting note cards. Okay, so we have this, so we need this. We have this, so we need this. But it's almost brilliant.
It's kind of like the ultimate expression of, like, Chekhov's gun. It's like, basically,
everything.
If we show it, there is a reason for it.
Yeah, everything in this movie, you know, like, the uncle is in jail. And then he sees the kid in his little crib, and he hates leaving it.
Yeah, it's, you know, again, like, that's just like a little fun throwaway that's just kind of there to...
I might lose my movie lover's card, but this movie, I wasn't familiar with how tight this script is until I just started recently watching it and researching it. So as a kid, I grew up, I went to watch Back to the Future 2 before I watched Back to the Future 1. And I went, what just happened? That was a dark movie. I was like 7 years old. And then I watched Back to the Future 3. And then years later, I went to Back to the Future 1. I'm like, that was a good movie. But I was like, whenever I think about Back to the Future, it's always 2. So I never figured out how tight this film was or how big the fan base was. So I don't know if you know this, but after I left Korea, so Niall and I met in Korea. He's actually responsible for me having a permanently dismembered pinky finger. Just want to let everyone know that.
Yeah.
So he was a goalie on the Chungju Tigers. And then I think one day he's like, he didn't want to play goalie anymore. So I had just arrived to Korea and he's like, hey man, take my spot at goalie. So I took your spot and then I got my finger completely obliterated in a soccer game. And I'm walking around a Korean town with my finger bent backwards and sideways, like a 90-degree angle. And I'm just scaring people on the street because they don't know what I'm doing. Then eventually a doctor snapped it back in place, and now I have a permanently disfigured. So, you know, I know the guy kicked it, and I dove for it, and there's a lot of factors, but you're the one that got me there.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, but like, so after I left Korea,
to be goalie.
I love goalie, though. I loved it. And then I went to defense, and that was even better. I just, you know, those dogs are like, there's a ball, I'm going to get it, I'm going to get it. Like, that was me.
Yeah.
Playing, like, all limbs flying. But so I started working Comic-Cons. I didn't really know much how popular Back to the Future was, but we were working this Comic-Con. It was in Chicago. It's like, it was one of the biggest in the country in 2011. And I saw this. We were really understaffed. We worked really hard, great staff. But I saw this line of about 200 people. And I walked up to him, like, what are you guys in line for? We're in line for Christopher Lloyd. I'm like, Bab, but this isn't his line. Why are you here? And like, well, he was standing here. So I had to take 200 people, and I had to bring them to a line with about 300 people already. And what they were there for was a photo op with Christopher Lloyd in a DeLorean. Oh, and wow. I don't know what happened, but it was like an octagon of railing around a DeLorean. And I had no room to get 500 people. So what I did was I just circled them around each other. You
That's
know,
right.
like
Interesting.
just
Just
kind of
like a
circle,
spiral.
circle. Never again in my Comic-Con life did something work so harmoniously. I just think everyone saw me and I kind of kept my cool and I sort of figured it out quick. And we got everyone through. I got all the photographs. And at the end of it, Christopher Lloyd was like, "Hey, Mark, come here." I mean, I took a photo with him in the DeLorean. And he was like
That's awesome.
the coolest dude. But I was like, man, 500 people for the DeLorean. I'm like, what's this all about? And then I started like seeing just the lines in every single Comic-Con. And there's like a cult around this movie. And then we've also been, I sent you the article, all these perfect movies have come out. So James Gunn, Chris Pratt, there's all these five perfect movies. And Back to the Future is on like a third of them. And
Yeah, well, they
everyone.
actually teach it in one of the California universities. They teach Back to the Future as the perfect movie.
Wow. I mean, the script, right? I mean, that's a tight script.
It's in their like screenwriting class. Like they teach it basically as, an example of, the perfect movie.
Wow. And I know at the time they were like, man, what is this script? Like, I don't, this is not the script. Like, why are you writing this script? Like, they didn't think it was the full
Well, they just
go.
ran. I think it was over 40 times they ended up like getting rejected before it finally got made.
Yeah, Disney didn't want the incest, and then other people wanted it more like Porky's.
So basically, yeah, it was too incesty for Disney and not incesty
We need more. We give it.
enough
And
for Game of Thrones 1985.
you go full Cersei and Jaime. Jeez Louise, how times have changed. But yeah, I mean,
A dark remake somewhere on the internet.
would you put that in your top five perfect movies?
Yeah, I think so. I know it would be difficult to kind of think of. I think I'd put Die Hard up there. Like
Oh
I'm a big
yeah.
Die Hard fan.
That's a classic. That was like a summer blockbuster that became a Christmas film,
Yeah.
which I love. I made like a cheeky list. I put Seven Samurai, I put Green Room, Deep Blue Sea. Deep Blue Sea's got to be on there, Niall.
Well, I'm aware of your predilection towards that movie.
That's.
It's, it has got, I think, one of the best death scenes of any movie, like where Sam Jackson's giving his like epic speech and he just gets chomped in half. Like I thought that was absolutely brilliant. Like I saw it in the theater and I was just like, yes, this is hilarious. I love it. And you
I was working at a
got
theater.
seeing, is it Rachel Weisz, swimming
Oh.
around basically a
Oh
bikini. I
yeah,
was like,
Saffron Burrows.
yeah. So I can get on board with this.
And that shark was waiting for her for hours, and then it waited for her to pull out the research before it tried to kill her, so then the sharks could destroy the research that they had. That's my theory.
That movie way too many times, bro.
I really have. It's become. But that's what's funny. The thing is, and I know I'm not talking about Back to the Future, but that's what got me most of my attention. So Wired, a guy from Wired, read my deep because I did a ton of data about Deep Blue Sea. He read it, then he interviewed me, and then Rotten Tomatoes read my Deep Blue Sea stuff, and then they offered me a writing job, and then
Yeah,
Cranked.
I've been doing like a lot of like random tomato meter based, Yeah, it's quite interesting.
Yeah, I've been with them for like almost 3 years now, I guess, because all my Deep Blue Sea stuff, Niall.
Yeah, there you go.
Neat. I know Back to the Future. I know there's an entire podcast about it. I know there's like everything's been covered kind of ad nauseum, but like before all this happened, what kind of led you to loving it?
I guess like it's the time travel aspect originally, I think. It's something that's always fascinated me.
Yeah.
Like I think when the first one came out, obviously I was too young to really kind of understand it. So similar to you, like I remember seeing, parts 2 and 3 very clearly. But I don't like my neighbor just down the road, he got like the VHS box set, I think, when it came out in like
Whoa.
1992. And we spent like one day just watching like 1, 2, and 3. And what I loved about like particularly part 2 was the vision of the future. Because if you look at like comparable kind of, movies that show the future, like they're all kind of either dystopian or like idyllic far in the future. You've got your Star
Yeah.
Trek where everyone loves each other and everything's wonderful. You've got your Mad Max kind of futures where everything is ruined.
Everyone's
And
wearing leather, killing each other.
this was the mundane future where it's like, oh, it's kind of in the future. There's like some new technology, but it's not like that out there. Back in the early 90s, I was like, yeah, flying cars could totally be a thing in 30 years.
Hoverboards too. That scene was
And
cool.
it just seemed like these are things that could exist.
Jaws
And
19.
Yeah, the funniest thing is they almost managed to predict the Cubs winning the World Series. Like, I think that was absolutely hilarious.
It's you know what I kind of like about it? What I liked as a kid was Marty McFly was just a high schooler. And what I liked about movies in the 80s that like really drew me towards them, like Goonies, Ferris Bueller, Stand By Me, kids, high school kids, all these, like they could go on adventures. Does that make sense? Like they.
Yeah, there was definitely like that genre of movies that was kind of aimed at the kind of middle school kind of kid. It's like, look, this could happen to you. You know, you could be on this adventure.
And then, I mean, Michael J. Fox, too. I don't know if you were watching the Eric Stoltz comparison with Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, I've seen the footage. It's just like a completely different tone.
Yeah, and Fox, man, he's just so good in this movie. I was talking to my wife Megan, and we were on a walk. You know, it's like one of the most active things we can do is just go walk around. And we were kind of talking about the movie, and she's like, Michael J. Fox kind of has a certain something. There's a charisma to Fox. And he's, you know what I like most, too, is when he first sees that there's time travel, he's like, you turned a DeLorean into a time traveling machine. Like you made a time, like you time travel into DeLorean. And then his face, he's in shock when he sees his dad. Shock. He doesn't take it. You know, in some of these movies where people are nonplussed about seeing dinosaurs.
Yeah.
He looks freaked out the whole time. And there's a manic energy to the whole thing. I think that just keeps it moving forward. And Fox is a big reason.
Like, you know, when you go the way he does it, like it just has, like, he's got great comic timing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Added to like the expressiveness of his reactions, and then you've got Christopher Lloyd kind of opposite it, who's got this whole mad scientist thing going, and it just works.
I love that line when he's like, you're gonna see some serious shit. I would love to do, like, people have done like the best F-bomb in PG-13 movies, but I would like to do like the best someone saying the word shit in a movie. Like, I think it's the perfect shit. And even they even like drop manure on him. Is that seeing some serious?
Yeah, he I think he shouts shit in that as well.
I don't know, it just makes me happy watching that. And you know, we were kind of watching this documentary about it, and I think I almost like it more now, knowing how Zemeckis and Gale got this done. Like, they made used cars one more movie with together, and then with Spielberg. But then they're like, we got to go out on our own. We got to do our own thing. And then they made Romancing the Stone, which was huge.
Yeah. And then the studio kind of gave them, it's like, hey, you guys are all right. You could make, like, the thing is, if you look at Zemeckis, like, if you take that period of time from like 1984 through to 1994, he's done like some movies that I love. The Back to the Future trilogy, Death Becomes Her, Forrest Gump. Those are all like movies I love.
Box office, they were huge at the box office too. I mean, like, what? Yeah, Back to the Future, yeah, Death Becomes Her, Forrest Gump, and then Contact. I don't think was that big, right? But it was
like Contact. Like, it was not what I expected going in. I think, I guess if I'd read the source material, I would have been kind of more aware of like what was going on. But yeah, it was kind of a nice sci-fi movie. It was
thoughtful, smart.
Did Independence Day come out that year as well? Possibly. Like, it was kind of a
yeah, the year before. I think Armageddon came out like 98 Armageddon. So it was like sandwiched between bombastic science fiction movies, and here's this thoughtful thing. But imagine if you're the marketing department, Niall, and you get handed Contact, and Jodie Foster's super hot, Zemeckis is hot, but that's like a tough movie to market.
Like, yeah,
because it's just a lot of math and patience and I don't know. So I guess they had to have marketed, you know, our Armageddon, you know, if you liked Independence Day.
Years of Independence Day comes a quiet, introspective look at the nature of first contact.
I like that. You should get into the marketing department, man.
Yeah.
Knock that thing out. But
employers that. I go to enough meetings as it is.
Oh, really? we won't go further on that. But I just, you know, watching this movie, it's just interesting how the whole process of it. I mean, the time machine was a refrigerator.
Yeah.
At first. And there was a monkey named Shemp. It's just,
the whole thing about it, like, having to be in the middle of an atomic bomb test, I think. And, you know, they did. I think Spielberg has a thing for nuking fridges, really. Like, it's just.
I saw Indiana Jones 4 when I was living in Korea. You were there too. Did you go see it in the theaters out there?
Yeah.
What did you? I gotta tell you, man, when I walked out of Indy 4, I was like, that was fine.
Yeah.
It didn't wreck my life.
I thought it was all right. It was kind of, I was like, yeah, there were some bits that were a bit weird, like the swinging with monkeys, Tarzan sequence was a bit kind of out there.
And then the aliens.
Yeah, I liked having more Indiana Jones in my life. And like, that's a quote I've seen about, you know, the potential of remaking Back to the Future. It's like, if it's rubbish, I don't have to watch it. But if it's good, that's more Back to the Future in my life.
How do you see the remake happening? I mean, Bob Gale and Zemeckis say they won't let it happen.
Vehemently against it.
How would a remake work, do you think?
I think it would be really interesting to, like, revisit. But, you know, say it starts in 2015 and, you know, it goes back to 1985.
Oh.
And goes forward to 2045. Like, take the, you know, the fish out of water kind of thing, but kind of explore that from, like, the current perspective, like, where we are in the timeline now. Like, I think that would be quite an interesting thing. You probably wouldn't build it out of a DeLorean at this stage, given that they're,
Yeah.
Slightly obsolete.
A Mustang?
You could do a Mustang.
They didn't want that. It would be a Tesla now.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, it's already got built-in electrical generation capabilities.
It probably has a flux capacitor. And I know something in there goes to 11 when it normally should go to 10 because that guy's a huge fan of Musk. Elon's a huge fan of
Spinal Tap.
Yeah. Jamie Lee Curtis was telling that story. Yeah, so he goes back in time. Okay, you know what's wild is, you know, 85 to 55, but then what? You know, if they go back to 85 from now, like, I'd like to see a high schooler deal with 85. Like, I mean,
I think that, like, no cell phones, no internet.
Yeah. Just calling people on pay phones.
Yeah. Calling people on their house phone and having to, like, ask their parents if you can speak to them.
Whoa. That would be okay. In 85, Marty didn't have a cell phone. So in 55, there were still cell phones. There were still cars. There's still TV. So he didn't have to adjust to much. Right?
I mean,
there's definitely big jumps in technology. But imagine a kid who's addicted to cell phones getting put in 85.
He's like, oh, right. Why have I got no signal on my phone? Wi-Fi.
Oh, man. That'd be I think, listen, high schoolers are, they could figure it out. But that could make for a fun story. But I guess the problem is, Back to the Future, it just seems like it was kind of lightning in a bottle. The way it came about. It just seems like so many people had their hands in it. You know, like Sid.
If you look at the people who were involved in it and like how much they've gone on to do since then, like it's kind of ridiculous. Like Alan Silvestri did the music.
Oh, yeah.
Like he's like all the, like he did Forrest Gump. He did all the Avengers movies. He's a bunch of other like really cool stuff. Yeah. They had the Back to the Future TV show, which launched Bill Nye the Science Guy. Like that's.
Really?
Yeah.
I never even heard of the Back to the Future television show.
Oh, it was, it was an animated TV show. And then, like, it was on TV in, like, the early 90s. And it started with, like, a segment with Christopher Lloyd in his lab with his assistant, who was Bill Nye.
Oh, wow.
Before Bill Nye. And then Bill Nye got his series off the back of that.
You know, I haven't watched his Netflix show because the title, Bill Nye Saves the World. It's like, get over yourself, Bill Nye. Bill Nye.
You see, the thing, not being in the U.S., I never really knew who Bill Nye was until a few years ago when it was, like, popping up in pop culture elsewhere. And I was like, oh, okay, this guy famous in the U.S. or something.
I think if you have a show called Saves the World, you might need to kind of, I don't know, that's a little squirrely.
Mm.
But also, I guess another thing about this movie, just the it kind of individual performances, like Crispin Glover, his performance is from another planet in this movie. Mm. And they had to ADR most of his dialogue because he was so nervous.
Yeah, and it helps because like his character was super nervous, this like really geeky guy who liked the girl, but never even dreamed of talking to her.
And like, I love how they sneak in some really weird themes in this movie. So, you know, you have the incest plotline, but you also have, I mean, he was originally supposed to get hit by a car because he was being a peeping Tom on Lorraine. He's in a tree with binoculars, spying on her changing.
Yeah, that's not creepy at all, right?
And then they never discuss it again.
He's like, bird watching. Yeah, that's what he was up to. Going back to how tight the script was, like they brought that up at, you know, the breakfast table the morning of the thing. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's how you and your father met. I hit him with the car because he was bird watching.
I guess, well, you know how they call it, like, remember back in gangster films, a bird, bird, like they call him a bird, like ladies were called birds. So yeah, I guess he was bird watching.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like in the UK, like it's still used like slang for a girl is bird.
Oh really? Oh, so maybe he told the truth.
Hey, a little bit of innuendo, you know.
But imagine being, all right, so you know your dad used to spy on your mom in a tree creepily, but you know that if you don't get them back together, you're Dunsky, and so are your brother and sister. So you have this kind of creepy dad.
Creepy mom who's hitting on you.
Yeah. She takes off your pants and calls you Calvin Klein.
That's funny.
I mean, it's just, you know, watching this movie again, you're like, wow, I did not remember this plot line all that well. And then Biff later on in the car. But I kind of like it, though. I feel like this movie definitely, I think it respects the audience. I think it respects teenagers. It doesn't kind of stay away from these themes. And, like, another thing about it, what do you think about this? Like, so many movies have tried to recreate this formula, and the movies have done it beforehand. But, okay, you meet Michael J. Fox. He's late for school, right? And then he is, like, goes home, but then he has to run to meet Doc. And then then they're chased by the Libyans. And then he ends up in a time thing. And then he goes, you know, he's running all over town confused. And he meets Doc. Then he learns he has 3 days to fix it. And then they have to get to the dance. And then they have to run here, run there. And at the end, they have to get 88 miles an hour. But there's a tree that falls on the thing. It's just like a breakneck pace for the entire movie. I mean, this thing, I think movies like that sometimes want to capture the tone of this movie. But I think that's another reason why it's so watchable, because it just sort of propels itself forward.
Yeah, like I find I can't watch just one Back to the Future movie. Like, I find, like, you know, it pushes me on so much that by the time I get to the end and, like, it signs off with, like, oh, where we're going, we don't need roads, I need to watch more. Like, I need to continue. Like, you know, got me so built up that it's like I have to continue watching.
And, like, what happens next? Like, it's just, I don't know. And then also, I think another reason, too, is, like, I think Biff, too, is one of the most, I don't know, the actor who did it, what, Thomas Wilson, he was a comedian, but for some reason he was able to capture this jerk. Like, in a pantheon of jerks, you have, what, Chet from Weird Science.
Yeah.
Shooter McGavin from Happy Gilmore.
If, like, and all the kind of various Tamans across the movies.
Oh, yeah. And he pulls, in that book you read, is he 7 Tannins?
He's like Biff. Griff, old Biff, a different version of, like, there's Trump Biff.
Yeah. Mecca Biff. And then there's, like, evil Biff. And I thought that was a pretty, I don't know. I guess I just like this
character. Biff, or Griff, whatever he was called, or Mad Dog.
But I just like, I don't know, what do you think it is about his performance that just, because he, like, when there's, so I, you know, I do a lot of weird lists, Niall, and I write about a lot of weird topics. And whenever I research, like, jerks or jerk moments, he's always in it. So, like, what is it, the writing? Like, what do you think it is about him that is just so just jerkable? Like, there's so many jerks in movies, right? That, like, you get bullies, but they just act really mean and kind of like you're like, I don't know. Well, this dude just captures an essence of a jerk. Yeah, I can't really put it in a articulate phrase.
Yeah, it's, he just, like, nailed it, basically.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He just had, I guess he just, you know, figured it out. Like, it's very hard to see. Like, people have tried and kind of copied. It's like, okay, you have to be, like, really mean and, like, you know, have an aggressive posture and stuff. But, like, he just kind of got the combination perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the little bit of stupidity helps to kind of humanize him a bit as well. Like, the getting idioms wrong and kind of...
Oh, I love that. What, make like a tree and get out of here?
Yeah. The set comes back and, like, corrects him as, make like a tree and leave. You make us look stupid.
I don't even remember that. Is that from the second one?
Yeah, that's in the second one.
All right. Like, have you ever seen the movie Not Another Teen Movie?
Yeah.
Like, there's a scene where that guy goes, I'm going to make like a tree and branch.
That's...
So I say that now. I think I always catch people off guard because I think I'm going to tell them to get out of here.
Yeah.
But I always say in branch.
Interesting.
Throw them off, man. I'll let you have that one for free.
Yeah, it's just very interesting. But, like, do you know they've got a musical about it now?
Wait, is it in production or is it real? Is it really happening?
It's so unfortunately it's put on hiatus because of the whole COVID thing, but they premiered in the UK a couple of months ago in February.
Are you gonna go see
It's
it?
as soon as it reopens, well, I might wait until it actually comes to the West End because it debuted in Manchester,
Okay.
which a little bit further north. I suppose I could make a weekend of it and go to the football as well. But,
Are you a United guy?
yeah, though I don't really follow it anymore.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I am. I'm United.
There's a photo of us like watching the Champions League final together at like 6 a.m.
Oh,
in Chelsea
yeah.
back in the day.
That was a good time. You know, I started liking them because the whole soccer team hated that I wore all the different jerseys. I would buy a Chelsea Liverpool kit for like $3, and they were knockoffs.
Used to go to like the dodgy like
Yeah, the
knockoff guy.
market. And get like I'd haggle with them and get all the, like Chelsea, Man U, all the different ones, and then all the guys would get mad at me because I was wearing a different kit each day.
Yeah, you're only allowed one.
Yeah, and then Patrick McCabe was like, he took off his shirt and gave it to me. He's like, "You're a Man U fan. Vidic is cool. You'll like Van der Sar. Like that's all you need to know." I was like, "Okay, that's cool."
Fair enough.
And then when I came back and told people I was a Man U fan, they're like, "You're pretentious." I'm like, "What?"
Yeah, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, you're right.
It only ran, I guess, for a month before everything got shut down, and the reviews were kind of mixed. It was like, if you are a huge Back to the Future fan, you will love it. Otherwise, maybe give it a miss.
Got it. So it's not gonna do like broad, like the producers crossed over big time. I think that was able to kind of, if you were a fan of the movie, you loved it, but you also love musicals, so this is more of like a niche.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of much more niche. But yeah, I'd love to see it. I think it would just be a really cool experience.
I want to see you in the revival. You should get a role, man.
Who would I play?
Oh, all right. So who would you play? Let's
Interesting.
see. You'd probably have to be Dad George McFly, man.
George McFly.
Or the brother.
I don't know if I could play a 17-year-old myself these days. Coming through in the beard. It's kind of.
I mean, but you're far away from people and there's bright lights. They could take care of you. Let's see. Biff?
Maybe
No, not Biff. You could
Botox
be.
on the old forehead and
Could you go big? Could you be Christopher Lloyd?
don't know. Not really my style. I don't think I could pull that one off.
You'd have to be the teacher then. You'd have to be the principal.
Principal?
Or Huey Lewis. Just saying it's too loud. Too dang loud. That's your role right there.
Well, that's kind of me these days. I'm the grumpy old guy. It's like, ugh, everything's too loud, and I see like people living opposite me who like have a big garden that are having a barbecue. And it's like they shouldn't be outside having fun together while I'm stuck inside.
Counting
It's
the
like,
number of people that are like in the
my
group.
fist. I'm just like, yeah,
Just calling
breaking
up. Right, so how about this? Let's take a quick break, and then we come back, we'll talk more Back to the Future. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And I gotta tell you, man, you're looking like that vest. Like, you part of the Coast Guard? What's going on? You're wearing an interesting outfit there.
My life preserver, yeah,
Yeah.
just jumped ship.
That's such a weird subplot, isn't it? And that had to be rewritten because of the addition of Michael J. Fox. They had to kind of re-outfit him, like, because he was not wearing the same outfit as Stoltz.
Yeah, I guess because Stoltz is like what, 6 foot,
Yeah.
probably 6'1", and then Michael J. Fox is like 5'4".
Yeah. And I feel bad for the actress that was cast to play alongside Stoltz, because
Oh,
when.
well, it was originally Leah Thompson, but then it went on hiatus and she wasn't able to do it, and then they brought in somebody else who never even got to film a scene, and then when they got rid of Eric Stoltz, then they brought in Michael J. Fox, and then Leah Thompson was able to do it, and it was all like this.
Oh wow. And that happened to Claudia Wells too, right? She was Claudia Wells was in this movie as oh god. Yeah. Wait, I got her name up here. But yeah, she's the girlfriend in this. Jennifer? I want to
Yeah, Jennifer.
say. Yeah, then she came back
And
because
then
she
it
hit
was
a
Scott.
pilot that didn't do well. So I mean this movie and then Michael J. Fox was he was
He was
filming
Rock,
all day.
wasn't it? Was it All My Family or something? I can't remember the name of the
He
show.
was doing oh geez Louise, why can't I think of that name? People let's see, Family Ties.
Yeah, there you go. I knew it was something about family.
Shooting all day and then shooting at night. That's nuts.
Well, it's commitment, right?
Yeah. And he's like, I'm 22, I don't need sleep. I gotta tell you, man, I worked night shoots. So I worked in the film industry for years.
Yeah.
And night shoots, you'd have to be 22. But when I was like 35, 33 working these things, it was just draining the soul out of my body.
Man, just doing that work in general, like, it's so hard work. Like, I did a documentary in Korea. Like, I had it was about my wife, and we had like a crew from Arirang, the English language TV crew, like, follow us around and film us for 3 days. And I'm like, how the hell do people do this like all the time? It is ridiculous. Like, the amount of work, like, even for just framing like one segment, like, the amount of work that goes into it is crazy.
It's exhausting. And there's the reality. I did reality television. That's a pain. I'm so like, I have great stories from the industry. And when, like, when my wife doesn't want to tell people what she does, she just like hands me off and like, Mark, tell them stories from, Hunger Games. And so then I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. So she pawns me off. You have good stories, but man, you're a different human. You're just, because the days are supposed to be 12-hour shooting days, but that means if call time's at 8 a.m., you're shooting 8, you know, sorry if I'm explaining this to you now, if you know it, or the listeners, but like, you start at 8 a.m., and then you shoot to 8 p.m., that's your 12-hour day. But if you have 300 extras, you got to get there at 4 a.m. Yeah. And then get them ready. So then your 12-hour day becomes a 16-hour day. And when you wrap at 8, you have 2 hours to get everyone out of there, so then that becomes an 18-hour day. And it's just, and then they're like, yeah, I'll see you in 4 hours. And you're like, oh, man.
That's crazy.
I mean, but they're all right. So it's kind of weird, though. There's a certain thrill to, and they must have felt this on this set. I mean, they had to play catch up, and they were supposed to open up in August, and then they got bumped down to early July. So they had 9 weeks to edit this thing after it was done and do special effects. But
yeah, well, there were only, I think I read, there were 33 VFX shots in the entire movie.
Wow.
If you think, like, these days, like, how many, you'd probably get that in, like, 2 minutes of one of the Marvel movies.
Jurassic World had over 2,000.
Jeez. And, I still think the T-Rex in the first Jurassic Park looks more real.
Oh.
Like, you never beat, like, that first movie because they had an actual T-Rex.
Yeah. And then they kind of just fit it in. Like, they used it when they needed it. They didn't just go, oh, we'll just put in VFX.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
sometimes having that constraint forces you to be a better storyteller, I think. Like, not being able to kind of do the crazy VFX shot. It means you have to actually think creatively about how you're going to frame it and how you're going to be able to shoot this using physical effects.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they had to do on this one. But it's kind of crazy that Zemeckis went on Polar Express and Beowulf.
Well, he did Who Framed Roger Rabbit as well,
which is a
great one. Again, with Christopher Lloyd.
That character, when he puts that tiny shoe into the acid. That's terrifying. And then his eyes bug out when he gets smushed.
Yeah, the dip was terrifying.
Oh, God. I feel so bad for that shoe. This is a baby shoe.
Yeah.
A sweet soul just got destroyed. And another tangent here, but so I have a video, like, I guess by the time this comes out, but I did something for Rotten Tomatoes where it's going to be a Jurassic Park versus Jaws. The summer blockbusters. I was really surprised. So I put this up there, and Jurassic Park got 75% of the votes or something like that against Jaws. And I was kind of surprised, but I think I'm in a Jaws bubble. Like, I'm in a shark movie bubble. But I guess Jurassic Park, man, people just love that movie. And I think it's kind of the epitome of a summer blockbuster.
I remember seeing that in the theaters. Oh, like, that blew me away. And I had, like, dinosaur movies. I had dinosaur toys. I was, like, everything dinosaurs. Like, that.
Do you think it's a fair comparison between the two with, like, kind of Jurassic Park versus Jaws? Because Jaws wasn't meant to be a summer blockbuster, right? Jaws was meant to be, like...
Well, basically, when Jaws came out, they didn't have summer blockbusters. Like, yeah. Jaws basically invented that.
So, you know what's kind of crazy? They started marketing a year before, and they went to Cannes out of competition, and then they were some of the first to really start doing TV ads. And then that worked really well, and they marketed with the book a lot. So I think that said it. And then Jurassic Park, dude, they had 100 companies do 1,000 licensed items for them. Remember when we watched Jurassic Park? If we wanted a Jurassic Park anything, we could find it back in the 90s.
The movie almost pokes fun at it. It's like, take the logo, slap it on a lunchbox. Yep. And...
Oh, man. I love that movie. I was just watching all those clips again. So, I mean, do you think Back to the Future sort of, I mean, it was the highest grossing movie in 85. Do you think it kind of belongs in the top 10 summer blockbuster conversation? That's a loaded question to ask you when we're kind of just going along here, but
yeah, I think, like, if you look at the ultimate blockbusters, like, yeah, the ones that I can think of, like, that I've seen that have been the summer event movies, I guess, would be the kind of thing. Like, you've had, like, was Titanic in the summer? I think that was the summer.
That came out in like November, December, and it was just in the theater so long. It was in theaters during the summer, but the following summer.
Yeah, I remember there were like queues around the block for that. But things like Avatar, that was summer, right? And like Avengers.
Yeah, Avengers was. Avengers. Yeah. And like, so I have the top 10 highest grossing if you want to hear them. Domestic. I got Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, E.T., Jaws, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, Jurassic Park, Phantom Menace. I'll keep going. Lion King, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Forrest Gump, Grease, Jurassic World, Avengers, Dark Knight, Infinity War, well, no, Ghostbusters, Shrek 2, Spider-Man, Independence Day, Incredibles 2, Dead Man's Chest, Batman, Finding Nemo.
Yeah, those, you know, it's amazing how many of the top ones are kind of Spielberg adjacent.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's the kind of, yeah, you know, that's his genre, I guess, the, you know, the summer blockbuster, like Jaws, E.T., you know. He was kind of, you know, George Lucas's best mate, so kind of throw in Star Wars, obviously, indie.
Yeah, those guys rolled deep. They made some money on those movies. I, you know what I think helped? So let's take out New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, and let's look at kind of E.T., Jaws, Jurassic Park, and Back to the Future. They all feature fantastical stuff, but it feels grounded, does it not?
Yeah. And the thing that grounds it is often through the eyes of the younger characters. Like, you have, like, the kids in Jurassic Park, you know, again, relatable. You've got Marty as kind of your younger, you know, E.T., obviously, with Elliot. And I can't remember what Drew Barrymore's character was, the little sister.
Those kids were so good. I think Spielberg cast kids perfectly, too. What great cat. And then, yeah, I mean, I guess they kind of hit. I mean, so, let's see.
Jurassic Park, you know, he was in Bohemian Rhapsody. He played the drummer.
That made me so happy seeing him in there. I'm like, Jurassic Park! Whenever I see kids, people, anybody from that movie, like when I watch Tremors, I'm like, ah, she was in Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Oh, so this is random, but watching Back to the Future made me appreciate Tremors more. And I don't know, like, so in the beginning of the film, Kevin Bacon is peeing off the cliff that the Tremor flies off of at the end. So in that film, they have their dynamic. And then throughout the beginning of the day, there's the lawnmower. There's the, you know, they have the tractor that's working. They have the Pepsi machine that goes off. You have the couple in there talking about guns. You meet the student. Like, everything in that movie kind of gets, like you said, Chekhov's gun. Like, Tremors is such a tight script. If you watch it, there's payoffs for everything throughout the movie. Makes me so happy.
Like, you know, I think if, you know, more screenwriters actually kind of use that principle that, like, you know, don't just have filler, like, things point, you know, you get some tighter scripts and you get some, like, really interesting movies like that.
You know what's interesting is I don't think a lot of people, so I guess you and I, we're young film students, right? You and I are at USC, and we're there in, like, what, the early 2000s, right? 2001, I guess, is when I started college. When did you start?
Like 2003.
All right. So I take a break for 2 years, and then you and I start college in 2003. Like, the screenplays, I think, we'll be like, man, Tarantino, like, I'm going to write this nonlinear, like, tie-in everything back and forth in this cool dialogue. And, like, I think you really want to get super ambitious. You want to, like, write something that'll change the world. But I think it's almost better just to write a really good meat and potatoes script. I'm not saying Back to the Future is meat and potatoes, but I think everything ties together. It's not super stylish. I think it's almost kind of old fashioned, I guess, in its sense. Like, it just seems, I don't know, the whole thing I'm saying is not a lot of people want to write that kind of script, right? They don't want to write just the tight thing.
Some people, they just want to focus on dialogue, like Tarantino. I haven't seen some of his later stuff, but he writes some great dialogue, and then others kind of hit and miss. But you know, when he nails it, it's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. And but it's only like people talk about Tarantino dialogue, but there's not many people who write like him, so it's no point to really mimic that.
And there's nobody who really talks like that either.
Well, yeah, you're right. You can almost tell immediately when he starts making his movies that it's a Tarantino joint. And I tell my film students all the time. Like, just kind of in the beginning, man, they don't even know how to turn a camera on, but they want to start using Dutch angles. I'm like, guys, just like, tell me a story in 1 minute with flat shots. Like, just make it look good. But you know, I guess that's, I'm not knocking on Back to the Future. I just kind of like how everything ties together. Like, I don't know. I dig it. And I also like that, I don't know. What do you think about the music scene? Do you think, did you enjoy that as a kid? Him just rocking out? They almost cut that because it cuts the story short.
It's just, like, it's a kind of slightly modernized version of, like, a classic rock tune. And it was just, yeah, where he went all, like, Van Halen on it and just started, like, shredding the guitar. Like, I was, at that stage, like, my uncle had introduced me to Guns N' Roses, and I was kind of into that whole kind of harder rock, kind of guitar-heavy kind of music. Mm-hmm. So I loved it. I was like, oh, yeah, he's, like, playing, like, amazing guitar solos.
And the kids were all into it until he got too hard?
Yeah, and I was just like, yeah, that was really cool. And then, you know, just the choice of music in general in the movie is, like, fantastic. The Huey Luna, the two Huey Lewis songs are, like, perfect.
Power of Love?
Yeah, and then Back in Time, I think, is the other one.
I mean, that Power of Love, I think Huey Lewis, he's kind of like, he's almost perfect for that movie, because his music isn't R-rated, it's not even PG-13 rated. It's just kind of fun, poppy, like the Power of Love. It's like earnest kind of music, so I think that fits really well.
Power ballady kind of, like, or power, it's kind of hard to describe. It's proper 80s music, I guess, would be the...
Yeah, that's a song you could retire on right there.
Yeah.
This Back to the Future hits big, and for the rest of your life, it just says, you get money every time it gets played.
Yeah.
I love that.
Royalties.
All right, and then let's see, what else do we have in here? We got Crispin Glover. We've already talked about him being a complete creeper, but I guess I do like when he becomes, and he knocks out Biff. And then there's how many bullies are in this school, by the way? So you have Biff and Billy Zane and his bullies, and then you have the other bully on the dance floor.
Oh yeah, the one is like Stifler.
Yeah. Who steals her away again?
Shermanator, like from American Pie, like the.
But that's, you know, as a kid, when you're watching that scene and he's fading away, like how scared were you watching that scene?
I don't know if I was scared per se. I think it was just kind of a little bit. You know the protagonist is always going to win. Like when you're watching movies, like I hadn't really had exposure to one where protagonist could lose. Yeah. So you're kind of like, oh, it's still going to be all right.
Got it.
The day. Be saved somehow.
And I have another question for you. I was watching this documentary about it. I think it's on Tubi right now in the States. It's for free. You can stream it. I think it's on YouTube. But they said in this movie, this character, Michael J. Fox, has no character development. Do you think that's true?
No. Like, well, in the first movie,
yeah,
he doesn't really.
Right? He just sort of, because there's no time for him to develop, he just has to act. Does that make sense?
It's basically over the course of, what, 3 nights?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, where he has to, like, basically stop himself from fading out of existence. He doesn't really have time to kind of do an introspective and be like, right, so what's gone wrong to bring me here?
Yeah, it's, I don't, I, can you think of any, well, I guess the Goonies, but Goonies has character development, I would say. The kids get tougher, right? They kind of learn. The brother steps up. Like, it's kind of a rare type of film where...
Yes, he does kind of gain a little bit of, like, respect for his family, or kind of, like, if you notice at the end, like, he's much more appreciative of the family that he has.
Yeah. And he's not going to know... Is he going to know anything about his past? So he's with this...
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, he won't, because he's come from, like, this original timeline where things were kind of crappy, and now he's gone into this second timeline where things are... okay, and his dad's a successful author, and now he has like a brand spanking new like Toyota truck, and he's
yeah, when they go, hey, remember last week, like, hey, like, you're not gonna know.
No, be like, oh, what, can you remind me, what did I do last week? It's like, oh yeah, we did. Yeah,
I guess you just blame it on hormones.
Yeah.
I mean, is that a happy, I guess it's a happy ending, right? Because he does not know these people.
Yeah. But they're probably still similar enough to his family to be kind of...
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and he looks exactly like him. And then what do you think about Bob Gale recently coming out and saying that they don't recognize Marty because Marty was a part of their life 3 years ago? Or, like, for 3 days, like, 30 years ago. So, I mean, well, that makes, like, sense.
If you think about it, like, you know, can you think back to some people who you knew for, like, a couple of days, you know, 20 years ago?
Yeah.
If you went to like a summer camp or like something and you meet like some people and you hung out the entire time, and then
I'm sure from Korea I've blurred a lot of the faces, and that was just 12 years ago, all those people floating around.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I had to. Someone showed me a photo from school the other day, like a buddy of mine, and I was actually able to name all of the people. But then, you know, I went to school with those guys for like 5 years, not like 3 days.
And I mean, he's not with them the whole time, too. With Lorraine, doesn't he just see her? Like, so she takes off his pants, and then he sees her at school, then he sees her at the diner, then at the dance.
Yeah, they have. She takes off his pants. They have dinner.
Didn't he call the kid an idiot? Doesn't the dad like he's an idiot?
Yeah.
What's a rerun? Yeah. And yeah, dinner. He ducks out on that dinner. He doesn't even.
Yeah, he ducks out because, you know, his mother's getting inappropriate with him under the table.
Yeah, that's another callback.
And then he just like then he goes off to dock, and then yeah, he just sees her like a couple of times before the dance, and then, you know, he spends like a little bit more time with George trying to pep him up and, you know, convince him to.
Yeah. You know. I don't think George remembers anything. That guy's so squirrely. Yeah, but like, I think that makes sense. Chris Pratt, I think, defended that decision on Twitter. And James Gunn maybe said that that might be an issue. Then Pratt stepped up, and then Bob Gale spoke out. So, I mean, this movie came out, what, 35 years ago? And people are still arguing about that, if it's a plot hole or not. That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't think it is. Like, the thing is, they would not, you know, you wouldn't associate what your son grows up to be as, oh, somebody you met like years ago. You know, you might think on and off, you know, because you've seen them grow up. So you're just like, oh, obviously that's Marty.
Yeah.
Like, haven't, you know, it's not like all of a sudden he just appeared fully grown as Michael J. Fox. You know, they've watched him grow up.
And that's what I love about this movie, though, that people are arguing this. Like, people are passionate. And, oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you looked through this, but have you looked through the trivia section on IMDb?
Yeah.
So normally I read everything. I had to stop. It is oppressively long.
Yeah, it goes on.
Right? Have you ever seen a trivia page as long as that one?
Not that I can think of.
I mean, I go through a lot of these trivia pages for the podcast and writing and research. 308
trees, apparently.
How many?
308.
Wow. Yeah, I made it through about 73. I'm like, that's enough. Because then it starts repeating itself to a certain extent.
Yeah, there are certain ones where it's just like it's variations on a theme, perhaps maybe from a different source or something.
I guess one more thing. I think Doc Brown has the greatest screams in cinema history. This is just the way he yells. And just belt, like, remember when he's trying to put that thing together and then it doesn't happen and he screams and then the tree falls on it? Like, that's a stressful little moment.
Yeah.
And I guess DeLoreans didn't even, their speedometer, wait, yeah, speedometers only went to 85. They had to fix it to 95 for the movie.
Yeah, well, you know, I think, you know, the interesting thing of that is that's probably why the doc put the digital speedo in there.
Yeah, like, you're right. Oh,
because
yeah.
The 85, so he needed the digital one to, plus it looked cool on film, like having the.
And Marty hated that car.
Yeah. They're apparently an absolute bitch to drive. Like. Good cars. It's Ireland's sole contribution to the automotive industry. Like, they were built in Belfast in this factory. It like folded after 3 years.
Really?
Yeah, they are by all accounts just horrible, horrible cars to drive.
Now, Belfast is like that's like my favorite place on earth, man. I've been there twice, and I've had the Guinness from Madden's. I think Duke of York's my favorite bar on the planet. We went there 1 year, and then we went back 2 years later. And they remembered us. And the owner of the bar went and got the bartender who sued us 2 years prior and brought him over. And we just had a bunch of drinks. So, like, they're the coolest people. Just, like, I love Belfast, man. The food, the drinks. Oh, my gosh. The best Guinness I've ever had.
Years.
But they built the Titanic and the DeLorean.
Yeah. There you go.
That's pretty. Those are big.
Did very, very well.
Yeah. The movies featuring them did.
Well, that's true.
And they had Game of Thrones, too. That was crazy.
Yeah, shame about the ending.
Oh, gosh.
I guess these things, you know, they start well enough, but they don't really end very well, do they?
I think that's that's why this movie worked. And you know what I think? I think the sequels of these films worked because they felt, obviously they were cash grabs, but they were sort of, they feel organic. They explore the world more, and they're different enough to, like, they're not retreads of, well... Yeah, they're not retreads. They bring something new. So I think that's why they work. Like, people have said this is the best trilogy ever.
It's definitely up there. Like, I would think, you know, the competition for me would be the original Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah. Lord of the Rings, maybe? The three?
Oh, that is excellent.
And then let's see what else is there. But everyone has a four, Lethal Weapon 4, Indiana Jones 4,
Yeah.
Bourne 4. Like the Bourne trilogy, that was like a really popular action trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah, Die Hard, they did what, four, and that
Five.
combination that was five. That was awful.
Oh
Yeah.
gosh, I love four. Five crushes my soul.
Four is fine. Like, four is a bit
Yeah.
of fun. Five was just dreadful.
It's one of the worst movie watching experiences I've ever had. So hey, I have a question before we get out of here. Any Back to the Future thoughts? Like final thoughts about this?
Yeah, it's just I think I'm probably gonna go and watch it again, to be honest. All this talking about it is kind of yeah, it's just it's been quite interesting, like just like doing a little bit of research for this, like reading back through like various bits of trivia and stuff that I'd read before but kind of forgotten, and like you forget how much went into it and like how good it is without reading it.
Such a tight script. It's annoying how tight you could teach a class on this.
Well, they do. It's I think I got that from the IMDb trivia page somewhere.
You know what? When I start teaching, if I ever teach screenwriting again, I'm going to bring up, people are going, but you taught screenwriting, didn't do Back to the Future? I was just trying to make sure my kids could write a page stories before they could write a Back to the Future script. But yeah, no, I'll definitely bring this up. But no, this was fun, man. And thank you for coming on, and thank you for recommending this movie.
Yeah, no worries. It's
This is
been
good. So for
fun.
me, Mark Hoffmeyer, for Niall Moore, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.